I'm really convinced that Lewis wants to play a central role into the game with us, and now doubt that he will be mega motivated.
Hello and welcome to the first James Allen on F1 podcast of 2025, brought to you by Autosport. Well, this is the year of Lewis Hamilton in red. The seven-time world champion will be blowing out 40 candles on his birthday cake today, the 7th of January, and he's then going to drive a Ferrari F1 car for the first time in a couple of weeks. Now, in his New Year message on LinkedIn, where he interestingly describes himself as entrepreneur, investor, and F1 driver, in that order, he wrote, "To anyone considering their next move in 2025, embrace the change. Whether you're switching industries, learning a new skill, or even just taking on new challenges, remember that reinvention is powerful." And that's the theme of our podcast here today. The fans are certainly excited. Formula One did a fan vote this week asking which team has the strongest driver lineup, and 56% of them said Ferrari with Hamilton and Charles Leclerc. 29% said Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri, and only 6% pulled for Max Verstappen and Liam Lawson. So how will this reinvention for Hamilton go? What do we know about the car he's going to be driving? And what does history tell us about F1 champions who make late career moves? How did it work out for them? We're going to dive into this story then in the company of chief motorsport writer Ben Hunt. Happy New Year to you, Ben.
Thank you very much, James. Happy New Year to you.
And with me here in our studio in central London, F1 writer Jake Boxall-Legg. How's things?
Very good, thank you. Yeah, it's been a nice break, so I think everybody's raring to go, and this is the story that's been dragging on for the last year, and I think we're all very excited to see Lewis in red, aren't we?
Oh, we're all excited to see him in red. Absolutely, no question about that. We'll also hear a little bit from Hamilton's new team boss at Ferrari, Fred Vasseur, from an interview I did with him last year. And we're also going to hear about the excitement in Italy from our colleague Roberto Quincaro. All of that to come. But let's focus on Lewis turning 40 today. The present that he wants more than any other is an eighth world title. Ben, is he going to get it?
I think he will maybe have a good shout at it in 2026. I think 2025 is going to be probably too much of a big ask. We're going to get into it, but you know, I think that it's going to be a massive year of learning for Lewis, and it's an exciting one. We're going to learn a lot about him. His relationship with Fred Vasseur is going to be tested. I just can't wait for it to get going.
I think, yeah, certainly I agree with what Ben's saying. I think 2025 is probably a little bit too early for this. There's a lot that someone who has raced in Formula One with Mercedes power or with Mercedes is going to have to get used to. It's a different culture, it's a different way of working. It'll be a very different car as well. But in 2026, if the car's good, if the powertrain is good, there's a lot still up in the air about that season, but if the stars align, he can do it, certainly. We've never had an eight-time world champion before, so it would be kind of nice to have one, and really sort of it would elevate Hamilton, I think, to a level statistically that we've not ever really had before.
Ben, you know him well, as do I. I mean, he is a guy where it's really a lot about the energy. It's good energies, it's negative energies he doesn't want around him. It's about re-energizing. You can see why he's come out with this line about reinvention being powerful, because he clearly feels it's going to be like some sort of new serum that he's going to take that's kind of maybe one or two of the wrinkles to fall away from his face. But more importantly, he's going to put, you know, lead back in his pencil as a driver and give him that fresh challenge. He needs to sort of have something to go up against in order to get the best out of himself. I mean, do you think that the change of scene is going to energize him?
Yes, I do. I think that, you know, his time at Mercedes, I don't want to say he grew stale, but he certainly got, you know, very disillusioned, I think, with life at Mercedes. And I think that he needed this change for motivation. He was kind of going through the motions is how I felt for the last couple of years at Mercedes, as they've sort of failed to deliver a car that is capable of fighting at the front. You know, we know that this style of car doesn't suit his driving, and he's trying to learn and trying to combat that, but it's not been helped by an uncompetitive car. But he's always had that motivation to turn up and deliver and do as best as he can, which You know, as Admiral, you know, you rarely hear him say, you know, I want to retire the car, which is why on those occasions last year when he mentioned it, you know, that's really out of character. That's someone that's had enough. He could have walked away from Formula One. The fact that he hasn't, let's remember the fact that it was him that will turn that contract down at Mercedes. He was already signed. You know, he was supposed to be there for 2025, but he cut that short because he wanted the new challenge. He wanted to be re-motivated, re-energized. And I think there's a couple of factors. You know, he needed that challenge. He could see what Ferrari can offer him, but also what he can offer Ferrari. And Lewis always talks about legacy and sort of a building process. His job at Mercedes was done. You know, he came in 2013. He was able to deliver them consistency, make improvements, and obviously all those titles. He now has the opportunity to do that at Ferrari and maybe then top out at Formula One, having guided them back to glory, maybe win that eighth title that we had mentioned at the top of this podcast. Yeah, and that would seal his status as Formula One's greatest ever, wouldn't it? It would be a massive achievement. But yeah, Lewis is motivated. You know, I think he needed this change of direction. And, you know, one of the other aspects of him is always when people tell him he can't do something or, you know, there's a lot of criticism put in his way, he uses that as motivation. And I think that, you know, the comments from Toto Wolff saying that every driver has a shelf life, and I think that will only serve to drive him on even more. And I'm really excited to see how he utilises all of that next year. It's going to be one hell of a learning curve for him, but it's going to be exciting.
I think that's right. I think a lot of the special drivers through history, you know, you think about Senna, you think about Schumacher, that sort of siege mentality, that sense of, like, you know, having something to really push up against, it kind of brought the best out of them. Whenever I think of Senna in that respect, I always think of that line, which comes out so well in the documentary movie about him, which is where he says, "It has to be my way. Today it had to be my way." You know, that kind of forcing something to happen as a sports person. But Ben used a phrase there during that last answer where he talked about out of character last year. And I that's what I thought, actually, in some of the performances, you know, and some of the things he said then afterwards, this kind of incredible low morale, which I've never seen really before, certainly not in the early part of his career, that was very out of character. Can you sort of, for the benefit of our audience, Jake, you're our sort of technical expert decoding all this stuff, can you explain why Hamilton sort of really hit some lows in terms of getting performance out of the Mercedes last year? And is there any risk in your mind that his 2024 performance level is the new normal for Lewis, rather than the fact that he's going to be able to find a fresh performance level, his more normal performance level in a Ferrari?
I think when you look at the, certainly the Mercedes in 2024, it wasn't a particularly well-balanced car at the start of the year. And they had all sort of, this is why they had this big change in front wing concept from the first part of the season to Monaco, because they were trying to balance out the rear with the front wing. And so they were compromising on downforce on the front wing and various other things. And so once they'd managed to dial in the rear, that's when they changed the front and the car sort of came alive for a bit.
When they won some races.
Certainly. But yeah, the issue was it wasn't particularly balanced and had a lot of problems when it came to bumpier circuits. Let's say take Silverstone, for example, weather aside, it's, you know, it's billiard smooth and we all know this. And Mercedes looked really, really good there. But when you take it to other circuits, not quite like that, I don't know, let's say Zandvoort, for example, or just like a other conventional circuit, it was really, really difficult for the car to get dialed in. The other thing as well was perhaps Friday flattered them and they thought, okay, we don't have to do quite so much overnight. And then it comes to Saturday and everybody's overtaken them in terms of pace and things like that. And then suddenly the confidence goes, and because you're not able to, I guess, link up the car to the road, let's say, and the drivers aren't feeling that confidence, then they go into qualifying. And that seemed to be where Hamilton was struggling the most.
Compared to Russell.
Yeah, compared to Russell, with his own confidence. He said, I think about three or four times, you know, I just can't qualify anymore.
Well, I'm not fast anymore, he said at one point. You know, I never thought I'd ever hear Hamilton say that.
And this is one of the great qualifiers of our age. And it's like, it doesn't suddenly leave you. So what is the ultimate issue here? And so we'll see in a Ferrari whether it has truly left him in terms of performance, or whether it is a platform that he can just work with a little bit better. I think that's the bottom line. But ultimately, and it's kind of been the same situation for this, the lineage of Mercedes cars under the current rule set. They just haven't been particularly balanced, and they have nuances and quirks that make them really good on one weekend and way off of it another weekend. And, you know, how can you build form and confidence with that when you don't know what the car's going to do at a given race? It's an odd situation to be in.
Yeah, and he will have been looking at the Ferrari during all this time and sort of looking at the consistency that they were able to find. I mean, they had their ups and downs last year as well, but they were kind of quick for quite big chunks of the year and over the last few years. Ben, you were going to say something?
Yeah, no, I'd say it could even be something more simplistic. You know, he'd handed his notice in at the start of the year, and he was serving his notice. He'd kind of checked out. And, you know, once you've done that, you're never working at your same capacity. The drive isn't there to deliver week in, week out. When you've done so, I think his head had been turned. He was looking at Ferrari. And what was unusual was the fact he said it, but it was an unusual circumstance for him as well, because, you know, he'd had that dip in motivation. And like I say, he was already... his focus has switched to another team who he wasn't driving for. So, you know, while he was running around behind that Ferrari, he was probably thinking about what he could bring to the table to make it even better. And it was kind of detracting from his usual thinking process.
Well, Autosport reported this week that Lewis is going to get his first test in Ferrari's test track with a 2022 or a 2023 car. And then they're going to transfer to Barcelona, where Ferrari's booked out 4 days, of which they can run two. It's in case of bad weather, which we've certainly got plenty of that in London at the moment. I don't know about Barcelona. Anyway, the rules have changed a little bit on this old car running. I don't know if people are up to speed with it, but basically now the rules are that any driver who's actually entered into the World Championship can only do a maximum of 4 days in a calendar year and 1,000 kilometres of testing in a quote-unquote old car, two-year-old car, unlimited for rookies and young drivers, which is great, and certainly a huge part of training young drivers to come in is using those old cars. But from Lewis's point of view, Jake, he's going to jump into a 2022 or 23 car at Fiorano and Barcelona. What's he actually going to learn from that? Is it more just about procedures and processes and all that kind of stuff?
There's a bit of that, but also, and I sort of broached this subject earlier, he's only ever raced in Formula One with a Mercedes engine. And so there's the power delivery in the Ferrari that'll be different. He'll have to feed the throttle on a little bit differently. The brakes will feel different. The steering wheel will be a different...
25 different buttons, I believe, on the Ferrari steering wheel. Yeah.
So it's like there's a lot to get used to. It's like, you know, if you, I don't know, this is a weird example, but let's say if you're a competitive gamer and you only play on Xbox and then suddenly you're on a PC, it's like you've got, you know, a keyboard to learn and everything like that. That's a very simplistic example. But and then there's dialing himself in with his team as well. Ferrari has a very different way of working compared to Mercedes.
They will all do their meetings and stuff in English, though, won't they?
Yeah, I think that's been the case for a while. I don't know if Lewis is learning Italian or not. I'm sure he'll give it a go.
He's making an effort to learn, is how I understand it. He's
okay.
Not taking any classes, but he will be learning phrases, you know, various things.
Well, he taught himself to play the piano, so, you know, give him a chance. He's got a musical ear.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think it is a lot for him to get his head around. I think going into anywhere new, completely new, it takes months to adapt.
Yeah.
So being able to do it in sort of not quite a pressure cooker environment, but in an environment where everybody sort of bands together and you're kind of living out of each other's pockets for 3 or 4 days, that's a really good way to build those relationships. So I think he'll learn a lot, but it'll be vital for coming into the season, hitting the ground running.
Ben, let's talk a little bit more broadly about the adaptation process from Mercedes. I mean, you know, you mentioned you thought he'd gone a bit stale there, but I mean, another way of looking at that, he'd been pretty much institutionalized. I mean, he'd been there for 12 years. So it's not just how they do pit stops. It's everything. It's like a culture shock. It's how they do, it's the timing of the meals. It's how they, you know, the whole, how they roll in every sense. From the cultural point of view, how do you see this working?
Yeah, I think this is the biggest challenge that Lewis is going to face. you know, even before the time at Mercedes, it's McLaren, and the way that they operate is very similar. You know, predominantly English speaking staff, and just the way that those two businesses and our teams are run are very similar in terms of their organization. Whereas Ferrari is going to be a totally different concept for him. Last year, I was in a shuttle bus with Michael Schumacher's old manager, Sabine, and I was talking to her about how Michael found that transition going to Ferrari, and he's had conversations with him, and he would be a little bit exasperated as to how and why they were doing things in a particular reason. And I think Lewis is going to have to come to terms with a similar situation. There's going to be lots of questions as to why do you do this process this way, and he'll have to get his head around it. Whether they change their processes to accommodate him, I don't know. Whether he can bring new elements which will improve them, I don't know. I think that's probably part of the relationship and part of their hope, in that he will be able to bring some learning from McLaren and Mercedes to their team. So I think it is a challenge for him. It will be a challenge for Ferrari as well. But culturally, it's going to be very, very different for Lewis. Just dealing with, different people, different language, and just a different mentality.
Good challenge, though. Be fun. I can imagine. I think I've heard stories that he's thinking about renting an apartment in Milan or whatever. I mean, although, because he lives in Monaco, which is not that far away anyway. So Milan's not that close to Maranello. But Jake, let's just...
I think, James, just getting on to that point, that's probably something that Lewis would do in order to sort of endear himself to the team. I think that he's very much coming into an organisation that isn't his. And we mentioned the language thing earlier on. I think that he will look to sort of create that bond, because at the moment that team is very much Charles Leclerc's team, and he's coming in as an outsider. If he wants to sort of integrate, then I think he will probably have to spend more time in Italy than perhaps Monaco, certainly for the early stages in the year, while he gets used to the processes and everything else.
Jake, let's just look a little bit more closely at the car that he's going to be driving, the 2025 Ferrari. Just before Christmas, the team boss, Fred Vasseur, told media that it won't be an evolution of the 24 car, but they're actually building something pretty new for Lewis and Charles. There are some suggestions that there's quite a lot of changes around the front end of the car compared to the 24 Ferrari to try and get more load onto the front tyres. Without getting too technical, what are your sources telling you and how that might play to Hamilton's strengths?
If we start with the 24 car, there was a lot of work that went on over the previous year to ensure that it wasn't suffering the same ills as the 22 and the 23 cars, which really struggled with tyre degradation in the race. It's brilliantly quick in qualifying, but it just wasn't able to, let's say, manage the amount of heat in the tyres.
Yeah.
And so basically suffering from sort of a similar problem that Mercedes did this season with rear overheating. Now, obviously, you want load in the tyres because, you know, that's what makes you quick. That's the tyres, weirdly enough, are the most important part on a Formula One car. And it's all about building around that to satisfy what they need to perform. If you are getting more load onto the front end, that improves, you know, driver feeling, driver handling. It essentially improves the kind of feeling that you've got around high speed corners as well, which is super important with these current cars. They generate so much load in the high speed. And if you feel like you're holding on, then you can get a little bit more out of them. So would that entail a switch to poor old suspension? Ferrari was one of the teams that didn't do that over the last few seasons. There's certainly a possibility. I wouldn't say they'd necessarily been so successful at that before. I think they did it in 2012. I mean, I know they challenged for the title that year, but after a lot of work on that car, it kind of depends what they want to do, what they're looking at as the next step for that. Because it seems that with the 24 car, they took that step forward in the races and tyre degradation was excellent, but qualifying performance wasn't necessarily where it had been. So how do you get the best of both worlds? And also having a car that not only we know how good Charles is in qualifying, and it's a car that just simply needs to facilitate his strengths there. but also bring Lewis on a level where he doesn't feel like he did at Mercedes, where he doesn't feel quick anymore. It's something that he can jump in, wring the neck of, and able to do that easily. So that's what they're going to want for the 25 car. And obviously it is sort of asking the impossible to be good everywhere. It's ultimately the Holy Grail, but they've swung one way, then they've swung the other. Now it's the time to find the happy medium in the middle. And if a step away, suspension-wise, is what they need to do that, then they've got to go for it.
It's interesting you should say that, because it is important, isn't it? And you need to, the points get given out on the Sunday, so you need a car that, if you divide a race into three stints, you know, roughly 100 kilometres each stint, you've got to make the tyres work for that period of time. But one of the things that's going to be really interesting for me about this is, I think Lewis will be quite surprised how fast Leclerc is in qualifying, like you said, but I think Leclerc will be surprised how fast Lewis is over a race distance, because for my money he's still right up there amongst the absolute fastest guys on a race distance, Lewis. So that'll be really interesting. Let's hear now from team boss Fred Vasseur. I spoke to him for this podcast last year and asked him a few questions about Hamilton, so let's just share them again now. What does bringing Lewis Hamilton here and plugging him into this, what does that do for the confidence of the team?
We are a bit in a particular situation, because that it's quite difficult for different reasons to attract people in Ferrari, because that from another team, because that when you are in UK, mainly in UK, if you move from Brackley to Milton Keynes, that you keep the children at the same school, you keep the same house, and from Friday to Monday, you can switch the team. Coming to Italy, it's a different story, that you have to move with the family. It means that it's a move, a change of your life. And I think Lewis was an important signal, because that... also because it's... He sent a positive message to the paddock for the future of the team. He has to make a choice where I am at the biggest chance to win the championship in 5, 6, 7. And he said Ferrari. And this, for us, it's also the best way to be able to attract good people for the team, to recruit. The contribution of the driver is not just the capacity to be fast in the last lap of the quali, and the job of the driver is to motivate everybody, to give a direction for the development, to be there at the factory, to get the best from everybody, because that when you have more than 1,000 people, if we are able to extract a little bit more from everybody, it's a huge difference at the end. And I'm really convinced that Lewis will be a performance contributor on every single topic, and the combination with Charles will be a very good one. I'm really convinced. And it's at the end, it's a package. It's not just the fact that someone is quick or whatever. That it's, I'm sure that we need also to have the experience of a championship winner, that Lewis won. 7 championship, not in a row, but he's coming with a huge experience, from Mercedes. And this is also important for us, because that we need to be able to have a kind of transfer of experience, know-how from the other teams. So in the past, we were a bit isolated, and it's not the best way to improve.
So obviously you won championships with him back in that day, in his junior career, when he was 20, 21 years old. He's going to be 40 in January, and it can go one of two ways with champions when they get the other side of their 40th birthday. They can either maintain peak levels, as we see to some extent. Mm-hmm. Alonso today is very, very competitive, or it can be less competitive beyond 40. Are you confident he'll be just as competitive beyond 40?
Yeah, for me, more than confident, because that... the difference is the motivation. For sure that when you are 40, or if you are not in a positive environment, you don't have the feeling that you can win, that you can... it's very difficult to keep the motivation that after years and years and years. I'm really convinced that Lewis wants to play a central role into the game with us, and now doubt that he will be mega motivated.
Well, the first thing to comment on there is the line that he had to make a choice. Where do I have the biggest chance to win the championship in 25, 26, 27? And he said Ferrari. So, Ben, that suggests to me that the commitment's for 3 years, or am I just reading too much into it? And do we know how much they're paying him?
You could be right. And they're paying him more than Mercedes were. I've seen a figure between $50 and $55 million a year is what's speculated.
Wow. I thought it was more than that, actually. Interesting. Okay, well, that's certainly worth having, for sure, and give a fresh motivation. Fred also says there that the job of the driver is to squeeze extra motivation from the team members, because if they all give a little bit more, it adds up to a huge difference. That is definitely one of Hamilton's strengths. I mean, I think he learned that from Michael Schumacher, whether directly or indirectly. That was, without a shadow of a doubt, Schumacher's one of his superpowers, was getting the most out of all the people around him.
Yeah, it was that age-old story that Michael Schumacher was the only person to go and visit, you know, the Bridgestone engineers back in the Ferrari days and that sort of thing. Ultimately, a team lives and dies with its people, and they're the most important, you know, aspect in building a successful car and building a successful culture. And ensuring that you get the most out of them is paramount here. Formula One is ultimately a team sport. I know the drivers are the gladiators and the ones occupying the posters, but you know, it's all about the endeavor of 1,000 people working together in harmony. And if a driver can lead that, then they're going to give everything for that driver. They're going to, let's just say, if a driver rubs them up the wrong way, they're not as inclined to help, and not as inclined to, let's say, believe what they say or have a sense of their judgment. But, you know, if you feel like a driver makes you feel 10 foot tall, then, you know, you'll run through walls for them. You'll spend that extra hour, you know, working through CFD or CAD documents or whatever, trying to find that extra little bit, or playing around with the setup sheets, that sort of thing. It's all about the give and take. And if the driver gives something back to the team, then the team will give more to you. I think that's sort of basic human dynamics in many respects. But I think he recognizes the importance of that. You know, you've seen, I'm sure there's countless examples in Formula One history of drivers that just came in and shouted at the team, and the team was just like, you just kind of switch off at that point. You have to feel valued and included.
Yeah, I can think of a few of those. But it's interesting because Ben mentioned Sabine Kemm earlier on, Michael Schumacher's manager. I was writing a second book, a biography I wrote with Michael in 2007 called The Edge of Greatness. One of the great stories she told me for that was that he used to be like in his room, you know, after a session, a qualifying session or practice session, having like a massage and what have you. And he'd say, right, Sabine, let's get the pad out and let's run through. He said, right. So, okay, now such and such, what do you think they would want for Christmas? You know, and he's like, and she's like, really? Have you nothing better to do at the moment? He said, no, it's important. It's important. And literally would go through all the people in the team. And it's like, I remember James Allison, the team, the technical director at Mercedes. He was at Ferrari sort of earlier in his career in this Schumacher period. He said to me one year, Schumacher gave him a Colnago racing bike for Christmas. Oh, wow. I mean, not a cheap thing, right? And a really nice one. And it was the right size. And he was absolutely made up and didn't expect it. And that's the kind of length that Schumacher used to go to get the most out of people. But anyway, we move on. So we let's look at some precedents in terms of whether anyone's ever done anything like this and made it work. Ferrari have had world champions in their car recently in the form of Kimi Raikkonen, Sebastian Vettel. Before that, of course, Fernando Alonso. None of them could bring the title to Ferrari. Vettel was 27 when he joined Ferrari as a four-time champion. He won 13 races for them in 6 seasons, I think. Alonso was 28. He won 11 races in 5. I think the first thing here to say, Ben, is that Lewis is a lot older, obviously, but I guess that also means more experienced.
Yeah, and I don't think age has really been one of those things that we've been able to level at him over the last couple of years. Certainly at Silverstone, you know, that performance that he delivered there, I don't think we've ever seen him waning. He may say that he's not as quick as he was, you know, that throwaway comment that he made. I don't necessarily believe it or the fact that he meant it. So yeah, I think, you know, for him, it was a cliche, but age is just a number. I don't think that is a barrier. You know, we know that he's quick enough, and on his day, he can still deliver. And I think that with that added motivation that we were talking about at the start, you know, I think we can forget about these statistics. Formula One is a different beast now. You know, the seasons are a lot longer. That's one thing. And I think that everyone was probably a little bit more shattered at the end of this year, given the fact there's 24 races, or last year. And that's going to be an interesting one, to see how he copes coming into this year, whether he's still, you know, as enthusiastic, and I'm sure he will be. But yeah, I don't have any concerns about the age being a number. You know, I was looking at this yesterday for a piece I was writing on Autosport and trying to find world champions in their 40s, and there are very few of them. But motorsport is a funny thing, and yeah, you know, we can't really quantify it in the same level as we can, say, football, soccer, you know, maybe tennis, you know, as examples. So I don't think it is going to be a barrier for him.
Okay, well, let's have a look at a few other precedents then. Niki Lauda, he reinvented himself, joining McLaren in 82 at the age of 33, and he went on to win a world championship for them. Alain Prost switched to Williams in 1993. I was there, I covered that. And he won his fourth title at the age of 38. Lewis can certainly look at that for comparison, but Prost, it must be said, did have a massive car advantage that season and made quite heavy weather of winning that title. But the interesting point here, Jake, is that no one since Prost, 1993, has managed to win a world championship over the age of 35.
I think for a long period, there's been this sort of perception that it is a young man's game, but ultimately it's all about how long have people stuck around, what opportunities have been afforded to them, that sort of thing. You have to look at, you know, there's not been a situation like Hamilton moving to Ferrari for some time, especially for an over 35 or something like that. So I guess the situation that it's only analogous to is like Prost going to Williams, or Mansell going back to Williams, or something like that. All of these greats having a few sort of lean years and then coming back and proving that they can do it and they can win a title at an unfancied age, let's say, for a Formula One driver. He still has the skills to do it. I think I said earlier, you don't just lose that overnight.
Well, some people do.
Oh, true.
But we don't think he has, is what we're saying.
I don't think you lose that amount of talent overnight, is what I say. Like, you see a longer decline for sports people like that. I still think he's got that there, and it's on Ferrari to build the car that allows them to do that. I suppose it's not quite like the Prost situation in that, because Williams had sort of been at the top of the F1 for a couple of years at that point, the car advantage was massive there. This is Ferrari on the way up, after a very, very long period of not being at the absolute tip top. So it's going to be, it is a new situation, I think, that I think everybody is going to be hugely interested to see how it plays out, because this isn't just a matter of a driver doing well. This is a matter of legacy as well. He's been at Mercedes for such a long time now. Ben has already said that it has soured. Maybe he's a couple years too late in moving away from it, but this is a new start, and I'm excited to see how it goes personally.
Yeah, it's super exciting. It's great for Formula One. And the best example, of course, I'm sure a lot of you will be saying this as you listen to this, is, of course, from a completely bygone era, which is Juan Manuel Fangio, who switched from Ferrari to Maserati in 1957 and won his fifth title at the age of 46. So maybe that will be Lewis's role model.
He's got a few
None
years.
Of us are around for that one, I'm afraid.
No, absolutely not. My old colleague Murray Walker certainly was, but you know, not too many other people in Formula One today could say they saw that one.
Just one other thing. I mean, that, you know, listening to us talk about it, I think that one thing that we haven't spoke about was just how much 2021 weighs still on Hamilton's mind. You know, we haven't really addressed that, and I do think that motivation that went on then, at race in Abu Dhabi, probably still weighs incredibly heavy, and adds into the mix, you know, that motivation to win that eighth title that would move him clear.
Well, let's check in, shall we, with Italy. Our colleague there, Roberto Quinquero, is always across things as far as what's going on in Italy. So let's hear from him now about how much excitement is building around Hamilton at Ferrari this year.
A kind of Hamilton mania is already started in Italy. Since the new year began, there is a big question mark that the Italian Ferrari fans are trying to answer. When will the first test of Lewis Hamilton with a Ferrari car is set to take place? The check, of course, will be Fiorano, but I cannot imagine the number of people that day will be around the track. I'm expecting Fiorano and Maranello streets will be filled with people. I'm expecting something that we haven't seen in years. So it will be an hard work for the urban police in Maranello. But I'm not surprised. All the national media, not only the sports media, are giving a lot of space to the man Lewis Hamilton. The mainstream is telling who is Lewis, his own passion and interest, the story of his career, and his desire to end his career driving a Ferrari. And in the last days, for example, another topic is where Lewis wants to live in Italy. In this case, we have an answer. Lewis will stay in Milan, a city which ensures privacy also to the football player. So I think is the right choice. At the same time, and that is important, a big part of the Italian tifosi is trying to imagine how will be the relationship between Lewis and Charles. It's a very popular topic in the last weeks. There are two opposite opinions about. Some believe that Ferrari will have a dream team that will be no problem at all. But there are those who believe that will be not easy for Charles to have a so big personality in the other part of the box. But all these answers will come from the check. At the moment, what I can confirm is that for many years I did not see so much interest in the season that awaits Ferrari, considering that the engine has not yet been started for the first time.
Thanks to Roberto for that. And remember, you can get in touch with us on at James Allen on F1 on X or email us at jamesallenonf1@autosport.com with any questions or comments. And we've got this intriguing one from James Stevens on X, reacting to the news over Christmas that Red Bull went for Liam Lawson to replace Sergio Perez this season, rather than the more experienced Racing Bulls driver, Yuki Tsunoda. His question was, Yuki has to leave now, surely, he says. If they didn't put him in this time, they never will. He can't just stay in the junior team. Thoughts?
Well, first of all, I think I've probably alluded to this before, earlier dates, but it's a decision that I don't necessarily understand. I think I rate Yuki very, very highly. I've spent a long time looking at his data over the season. By far the quicker of the two drivers in qualifying. Maybe a little bit less consistent than Lawson in the races, but ultimately the peaks are there. Overall, he's capable of producing faster race times. Just there's a little bit more variance in that. I think Red Bull have gone for perhaps the greater development of Lawson in that decision, which, you know, it's understandable, but I would have just loved to have seen Yuki get a chance in that car. But yeah, if they're not going to take him, then ultimately, yeah, I think his future lies away from that. What are the opportunities there? Well, I suppose you can say Aston Martin with its Honda link up for 2026 and beyond. Tsunoda is also partially a Honda driver, so it would make sense to do that. But are they going to change the lineup for 2026? One would suspect. I know I made a prediction in the episode we did before Christmas that Fernando Alonso was going to retire at the end of the season, and maybe there's a chance that he does that. But if he's not, I don't see Lance Stroll moving away from the team. So where's he going to go? I think if Red Bull was upfront about the fact that they didn't want to take him, then probably shouldn't have offered him that extension to his contract. He could have been on the market for next season and been a contender elsewhere. So I think he's been done a little bit of a disservice overall. It's a bit of a shame that we don't see him at a higher position in the table, because
well, he's box office over the radio, that's for sure. Good stuff. All right, well, we'll round it up there. My thanks to Ben Hunt and to Jake Boxall-Legg. You can read all their fantastic writing about F1 on Autosport as we build up to the start of the new F1 season. My thanks to Dre, Matt and Jason on production. And thanks to you all for listening. Please click to follow or subscribe. Leave us a review and a rating and tell all your F1 mad friends about us. We love seeing new listeners join the podcast. And we'll be back with another one very soon.